You're listening to the Body Literacy Podcast, your connection to the art and science of feeling really good, body, mind, and spirit. I'm your host and holistic health coach, Jen Mayo. If you've never experienced truth and freedom inside your body, an amazing adventure is about to begin. Healing happens in community. Body literacy is your tribe. Join me in discovering the keys to fearlessly unlocking your body's innate intelligence and resilience. Turn on to the wisdom of your body as we connect your wellness dots by exploring whole person healing, from neuroscience and nutrition to sexual health and sleep. Join the wellness revolution and start speaking your body's language. Before we get started, I wanted to introduce you to the most profound and impactful piece of health technology I've encountered in 3 decades of navigating my own health challenges. LifeWave is a wearable health technology that uses your own light energy to optimize your health. If you've followed the Body Literacy Podcast for any period of time, you likely already know that I'm a bit of a walking science experiment. I have a passion for exploring how time-honored ancient healing arts can be coupled with modern science and technology to optimize our health, wellness, and vitality, and how we can empower ourselves with the knowledge and optimization of our own onboard wisdom and healing potential, rather than viewing the human body as a problem to be solved. LifeWave's phototherapy patches use light to stimulate the body's natural healing systems. By applying LifeWave's non-transdermal patches to specific points on the body similar to acupressure, where the patch covers the skin, infrared light emitted from the body is reflected back into the tissue, stimulating specific regions of the brain and tapping into the body's own flow of energy and the ability to heal itself. LifeWave patches are not intended to treat any specific condition or disease, but rather support the body's own innate healing mechanisms. When we take a holistic approach to health and consider there is really only one state of dis-ease in the body, imbalance, rather than the 32,000 diseases defined by conventional medicine, rebalancing the body and supporting our own built-in capacity to heal becomes a journey of ease rather than a frustrating and disempowering struggle to control dis-ease. Energy medicine operates by a different set of rules than material medicine. I talk about experience-based medicine a lot, and LifeWave is simply a therapy you have to take for a test drive to feel the benefits for yourself. To learn more or try them out, just visit jenmayo.com/LifeWave. In this episode of the Body Literacy Podcast, I am beyond delighted to share with you my conversation with author, educator, naturopath, nutritionist, and highly sought-after international speaker on natural self-healing, Barbara O'Neill. After being silenced by Australian health authorities in a modern-day natural medicine witch hunt, Barbara chose to continue spreading the message of self-healing internationally by going on tour outside of the land down under. The health board's condemnation of her work turned out to be a blessing in disguise when videos of Barbara's lectures went super viral across social media platforms. Offering insight on natural healing with its basis in biblical teachings, Barbara now educates people around the world on the body's intelligent design and its innate capacity to self-heal. Her work honors a paradigm of medicine that exists outside of the disaster management model of allopathic medicine, and she empowers patients with the knowledge that they are, in fact, in charge of facilitating their own healing. Barbara's work is part of a growing movement of sovereignty and self-empowerment in health. When we honor the laws of nature and understand that health is not something someone else can do to us, we're able to reclaim the health, happiness, and vitality that is our birthright. The body does not lie, and there is no man-made authority capable of silencing its truth. Barbara is a gift to those of us ready to take self-ownership of our own health. Welcome to the podcast, Barbara.
I'm glad to be here.
Yes, thank you so much. So your content and educational platform has really caught wildfire on social media lately, and I think it's very timely, certainly with the state of the world as it is right now. And I kind of wanted to start out the conversation. I think this will resonate with you. I recently came across a Russian word called krivda, that means, it's a Russian word that means crooked truth, essentially. And I think there is a lot of things happening in the world with regards to how deceit is playing out in the landscape, especially in the world of health.
And I know you probably have some opinions on this yourself, and I was hoping you could share with us your story about how you left Australia.
I certainly agree with you. It's a strange word, crooked truth, because truth is just truth. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. There's a lot of deception. I like the word you use, because deception is not as it seems. Mm-hmm. And if it was a straight out lie, people would see it. But mm-hmm. the problem is it comes in an area of deception which is not as it seems. So I'm going to give you a really quick background. Okay. And that is, so just picture me in a rainforest with my six children, a long way from a hospital and learning simple natural remedies, and also being deterred from medicine because of my daughter's experience, where my first child, 6 weeks and four courses of antibiotics later, I thought, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, the earache kept coming back. So that really, that plummeted me really into the world of herbs. And it was mm-hmm. exciting seeing that the American Red Indians, you know, they had a lot of things. And at 26, I asked the old lady next door to me, she was 85. I said, what did your mum do when you had an earache? She said, onion poultices. So really that was the start. You know, I've just turned 70. This was when I was 25. So this is the timeline we're looking at. So in a rainforest with all my children, I say to people, I tried lots of things on them and they all survived. In fact, they're all strong and healthy and doing it to their own children today and helping others, which, you know, practical education is the best type. To my children, it's as easy as sitting down and eating a meal as putting a poultice on, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just what they were brought up with. And so then I married my husband, Michael, 25 years ago, and he said to me, I hate health lectures. Well, going into being a health director, it was a little daunting for me. But, you know, when we started our retreat, the first guest was one. I could handle that. And then little by little more came. But my want to help people, my want to see people delivered from, you know, really the chains of disease, which so many were, and also seeing how the medical profession, there was really no answers. It might have eased symptoms, but it never cured. And so as I began to lecture, I found out the best way to learn is to teach. Mm-hmm. And, of course, many people coming to our retreat, every guest taught me something. And so it was probably about, we're looking at 2011, 12 maybe, we began to put my lectures on YouTube. And that's when we basically went worldwide, and before probably a third of our guests just about were overseas. Mm-hmm. And then my husband began a political party, and his political party, he probably began about 2015, I could be wrong, but about there, a few years before COVID, because he just said what the government's doing is against our constitution, saying mm-hmm. that you can't put a child into childcare unless that's wrong. The government can't do that. Right. He said someone has to do something. So he started his political party, and when COVID came, that mushroomed. But what happened to me was just before COVID, 2019, and we really believe it's because of Michael's political party. Mm. Because I maintain, how can there be a crime if there's no victim?
Right.
No one person has come forward saying, this poultice hurt me, and by the fact is poultices don't hurt you. So that's all we can think of it is, because the people that put in complaints about me have never met me. They mm-hmm. do not know me. They have never been to our retreat. And we know Michael has information to show that, you know, a request went out, can we have some volunteers to take this woman down? Now, Michael even showed that request to the Healthcare Complaints Commission, that the Healthcare Complaints Commission were being used, you know, put me down. But I think directions came from higher even above them that I had to be stopped. And so I was banned. I received a life ban. which was a shock to me at first, because all I ever wanted to do was help people, to educate people. So it was a puzzle to me, but I guess it was a political move. And I had to go through a tribunal, I call it the Inquisition, where I was questioned for 2 hours by 4 people, and especially the head of the Healthcare Complaints Commission. You know, it never worried me, because I've done nothing wrong and I have never claimed to heal any disease, and I'm politically correct because, and anyway, I can't heal any disease. The body and the body alone can do it. But then they've used that statement to say, Barbara says, because the body can heal itself, you don't need to go to the doctor, which, of course, I've never said.
Yeah.
So they twist the words. That's why I will not be interviewed by most media, because they twist it.
Well, I'm honored that you're here with us.
Well, right. I'm glad to be here, and I'm happy to make known the truth of what happened to me. And Mark said to the, you know, we're talking to the lawyer after the tribunal, and she said, I can't believe this. They've got nothing on Barbara. Now, she sits through these all the time. Mark said, does that mean she'll be freed? And the lawyer said, oh, no, she'll get a life ban, but she won't go to jail, because if she was guilty, she'd go to jail. That's justice. Right. And there is no government body higher than the Healthcare Complaints Commission. Mm-hmm. And we could go to court, because it is so unjust, but it would start at $500,000. Well, we haven't got a spare $500,000. So.
Right.
Marcus said to me, Barbara, you've got a choice. You can retire, and I was certainly retirement age, or you can just go overseas. And I thought, you know, I feel good. I feel as good as I felt in my 40s. I have as much energy. I have more information in my brain than I've ever had. I have more experience in my brain than I've ever had. I think it would be wrong to stop. Mm-hmm. So I said to Michael, I'll go overseas. Mm-hmm. And so in 2020, of course, everything was locked down. In 2021, I was away 9 months. In 2022, I was away 7 months. This year, I'll be away 9 months all in all. And some people say, don't you get homesick? And I said, oh, I don't allow myself that.
Yeah.
I just love where I am. And I also know, and I think most people realize this, that I think that they're going to be shutting down things again soon. So I just work while I can.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think oftentimes what we see as a curse turns out to be a blessing. And certainly I think the attempts to silence you have turned into the biggest explosion of your information to disseminate to the masses. It's almost like when they tell you not to look somewhere, there are those of us who know to start looking there.
That's where we looked. You know, we laugh about it. In fact, my mind finds it hard to comprehend what's happening. I'm just glad the information's getting out there. But there's a psalm in the Bible. It's Psalm 146. It says, but the ways of the wicked God can turn upside down. And I think that verse explains what's happened. It's what they tried to do has turned it upside down, because they can't stop this social media in Australia where I'm supposedly banned, that I've got more exposure than I've ever had.
Exactly. We should almost thank the Australian government for...
Well, my husband says he's thinking of writing a letter to the ACCC and saying, thank you.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And we're kind of talking about truth here. And, you know, I feel like the body doesn't lie. And when we honor the truth of the body will just rebalance naturally. And our spirits at the same time follow suit in that balance. And I know you have a tremendous message in terms of the connection between health and spirituality and why those go together. And I often use the term I like to call self-pathy. You know, we've got allopathy, naturopathy, and then we've got self-pathy. And I love how resonant your message is with just empowering people with the truth of their own body. Can you kind of expand on that a little bit?
You know, I love what you said, and I'm seeing it more and more. And I'm in Merrylands at the moment and speaking to about 250 a night, and people come up and say, "You saved my life." One lady said to me last night, "Over 20 years I've been trying to solve this from doctor to doctor to doctor." She said, "I watch your lectures," and she said, "It made sense. I began to do it and I'm getting results." Do you know, that is worth more to me than $1 million payment, really and truly, just to see people regain their health. And it's actually retraining people, because we've been trained from children, mm-hmm. get sick, go to doctor, doctor gives pill, get better. So we've handed health over to doctor. And I think a lot of people are seeing that it's not working, so they're handing health over to naturopaths. That's why I haven't heard the term self-pathy. I love it.
Yeah.
But what about me? You know, mm-hmm. I'm the one that lives in my body. I'm the one that only knows how it feels, only knows what helps, what doesn't help. And one of my hardest things to do is to convince people that they can do it. Mm-hmm. They've just got to listen. Please listen. So I say, "Have you ever been to a doctor that won't listen to you?" And everyone nods, enthusiastic. Or I say, a health professional. I say, "Don't be that doctor." And then we get silence. Mm-hmm. If your body speaks, you must listen. And if you don't listen to the first whisper, the body will start screaming. And when it starts screaming, it's doing damage.
Yeah.
And I love that statement. I got it out of a book called The Gift of Pain by Dr. Paul Brand. Mm-hmm. My eyes were opened even more when I read that book 2 years ago. The Gift of Pain. Pain has a purpose. It's mm-hmm. a signal. It's saying, "Excuse me, can you do something? Can you respond to me?" And I was in a house a little while ago, and I love children. I always watch children. And in the house there was a little 2-year-old boy, and I'd see him go up to his mother and say, "Mom," and she said, "Yeah, in a minute, in a minute. Mom, Mom, in a minute, in a minute." She was busy. "Mom, Mom." And then he'd start crying, and then he'd start screaming. Mm-hmm. And I took this lady aside a few days later, and I said very delicately, "If you would listen to your little boy's first cry, he would not get to screaming and crying." Mm-hmm. She just looked at me and she said, "Thank you." I'm so glad she said thank you. I'm so glad she wasn't offended. But I was an observer, and I thought, this is exactly what happens in human bodies.
Right.
Listen to the first whisper, and then it won't get to screaming mm-hmm. and severe damage. And when people come to me with severe damage, wow, that's hard. They say, "How can I turn this around?" The first thing I say is, "This is going to take a lot of work." Mm. This is going to take a lot of work, because the more serious the condition, the more serious the steps to turn it around.
Exactly.
But we live in an incredible body that is so merciful to us. Mm-hmm. And once given the right conditions, we start to see turnarounds.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. I often talk about how the body is sort of an antenna for consciousness, but everything in this industrialized Western world is really fighting against the purity of the body and our ability to sort of access higher states of consciousness that I think many of our ancestors had access to because they weren't in such a polluted world. And I think it's interesting we're having this conversation today because I'm starting a 5-day fast right now. And I've gotten very interested in sort of the historical context of, biblical and scripture and different indigenous cultures' use of fasting more in a spiritual context. Obviously, it had the benefits that maybe they weren't necessarily specifically trying to access for physical reasons. But the ability to use fasting in a manner to heal the body and access higher states of spirituality. What can we glean from using fasting as a healing tool and that mechanism to connect to something greater than ourselves?
We certainly can. It takes about 1,200 calories to digest a meal. Mm-hmm. So when we're not digesting a meal, it's like we've got a whole lot of little workmen mm-hmm. zooming around the stomach saying, what are we going to do? I mean, around the body saying, what are we going to do now? And I like to think that we access this in fasting. Mm-hmm. And I also give the illustration that it's like being on holidays at home, because every day we sweep the floor and wash the dishes and wash the clothes and make the bed, da, da, da. But then in the corner there's these papers piling up. That's me. Or in the bookshelf, things are real. The bookshelves are starting to look a little bit like something's just been poked here and there. So on holiday, that's where we go. We go to the parts that we just don't have time on. We have our maintenance work, and mm-hmm. then there's that extra. And because with digestion, such a lot of energy is required for digestion, especially if people are eating all day long, which of course is what we do not advise. We advise the time-restricted eating come from the intermittent fasting, the just eating twice in 6 hours apart in a 24-hour day. So that's a great daily maintenance, because you've still got that time where the body can do its maintenance on not only house cleaning but a little bit extra. And maybe if I had time, instead of just shoving the book in the bookshelf, I'd sort of put it where it's supposed to go. Do you know what I mean? But the time-restricted fasting does do that. But actually stopping food totally for a short period of time, not only does our body start to look at cleansing and healing, and, of course, it's been used for centuries, but also the spiritual realm. Mm. And, you know, you're probably aware that the hybridized wheat of today is causing a lot of problems, and mm. one of the most common symptoms is brain fog. Mm-hmm. So what's brain fog? Brain fog is the opposite to clear mind. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the food that people are eating today, it just prevents the brain actually going into areas where I believe God meant us to go, the more spiritual areas. So when you go to the other extreme of no food at all, the mind is so much clearer, mm-hmm. so much clearer. And that's why I think monks and priests, and the Bible certainly talks about it, have used fasting to get a clearer mind, maybe a clearer understanding of God, a communication with God. So absolutely. But on the other hand, for people that can't stop, can't do the fast, they can implement that time-restricted eating where they're still accessing a touch that. So it's the brain and the body are very closely connected, and when the stomach particularly is overloaded, which is happening a lot today, hardly ever getting a break, then that brain fogs. And on top of that, you put the foods that have been hybridized, adding even more brain fog. Whoa, no wonder people don't have time to think, and they're so busy that they just collapse into the easy chair at night and put the news on, and oh dear. Then those messages come in that almost seem to be designed to catch them. The brain isn't clear enough to discern truth from error. And what happened in 2020, 2021, it's not surprising that that all happened. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I like to say that the body is an ecosystem, not a battlefield, but I think so much, especially as it's been very highlighted in the last 3 years, but you know, the grand scheme of how allopathic medicine came to be in the last 100 years or so has really taken this militaristic view of the human body, which I think is very counterproductive to how the body actually works. And I know you have some opinions certainly on microbes and how we've been conditioned to go to a doctor and get an antibiotic when you have, you know, a little sniffle or whatever's going on. Can you kind of elaborate on maybe how we can approach a new version or a new paradigm of medicine? Because I think the existing one isn't even fixable. That is much more gentle and approaches the body as this ecosystem rather than something that we have to rage against.
Absolutely. I think to lay a firm foundation, so to speak, the fact is the body can heal itself. Mm-hmm. And then the question is, well, why aren't people healing? It's because the body will heal itself if you give it the right conditions. Mm-hmm. And so the most sensible thing to do really is to look at how the body works, because when you know how the body works, then you know how the body heals. And you might have seen my lectures where I go to the what I call the CBD of the central of the human body is the central business system, which is the inside workings of the cell. Mm-hmm. When you understand how that works, then you start to understand what the body needs. And then when you understand what the body needs, you start to understand how to work with these healing processes. And because we are all so different, it's important to listen. And someone might say to me, Barbara, I've been doing this for so long. How long do I do it for? And I say, well, as long as you need to. Well, how long's that? So I say, well, are you getting responses? And it makes me realize people have not been taught to read their body, to look at their body. In fact, if you're getting a response, the body's saying, I like this. Can you keep doing this, please? And in Psalm 104, verse 14, the Bible says God made herbs for the service of man. I love that verse.
Yeah.
So the herb comes in and says, where would you like me? Mm-hmm. What would you like me to do? Medicine calls it a synergism. Working with the needs of the body. And someone mentioned this to me recently, and I think it makes sense. Drugs are robots. They've been programmed. Mm-hmm. So they come in, there's no common sense because they're just robots. They come in and they say, I've got a job to do whether you need me to do it or not. And that justifies reason for me. That's why I say to people, if you start using cayenne pepper, and you're still going to stay on your blood thinner, your blood's going to get very thin. Mm-hmm. And one man said to me, my doctor said I've got to stop doing what I'm doing. My blood's getting too thin. I said, what about stopping the medication? What about stopping that bit? Because you can take a bucket of cayenne pepper a day and you will still not bleed to death.
Right.
And I don't know anyone who's going to have a bucket of cayenne pepper a day, but it's just to use an extreme
right.
to show you that the difference between herbs and drugs. Mm-hmm. Herbs work with the body.
Yeah.
They work with that healing power that God put in the body. And of course, God made the body. He made the herbs. So they actually work together. And then there's the amazing water treatments. And what the water treatments do is they move blood. And the blood is actually the healer because it's the carrier of oxygen, the carrier of nutrients, the carrier of water to the CBD. So understanding all of that, so that's how I like to lecture, to awaken in people that everything they need is actually in their body. Mm-hmm. So when I got COVID in 2021, a double vaxxed man brought it to our retreat and gave it to half the people. People said, what did you do? I said, nothing, because I live in a body that can heal itself. Mm-hmm. I had a bad headache for the first day. I had a high fever for the next 2 days. Praise God. I love fever. Mm-hmm. Fever has a purpose. I knew it was my friend. They said, what did you do? I said, slept a lot, drank a lot, ate hardly anything. And right. by the third day, I emerged a little tired. You know, a fever's like climbing several mountains. No wonder I'm tired. Mm-hmm. So I like to do nothing, because I know my body can do it. And so people say, what about ivermectin? I say, well, I don't use drugs. But if someone took ivermectin that helped, I'd say good on you, but it's actually not what I would do.
I know I've heard you tell the story of Florence Nightingale before, and I think that's like probably one of the most perfect examples to explain just how the body works to heal itself if we just give it the right conditions. Can you kind of maybe briefly tell us that story?
Oh yeah, I've got her books. It's her main nursing book is Nursing, What It Is and What It Is Not. I love that title. And when I went to I was in Indonesia and I was speaking, this is probably 13 years ago now, and I was speaking at a big university there, and I went and looked through the nursing department, and they had a big picture of Florence Nightingale. They had one of her sayings, and every nurse had to memorize that pledge. Isn't that wonderful? Mm-hmm. And I was talking to a nurse who was trained in about the 1930s or 40s, and she said, "We had to read Florence Nightingale's book." I thought, wow, isn't that wonderful? There's nowhere like that now. And you don't hear a lot of Florence Nightingale because her theory does not go hand in hand with the germ theory. Mm-hmm. And I love the way she was called to Scutari in 1854 because the death rate in that hospital, the French and the British were fighting the Russians, the death rate was 50%. So when she came in, she knew her limitations as a woman in 1854.
Yeah.
And so she contacted the British government and said, "We need a sanitary commission." So a group of men came, and she knew straight away when they saw the raw sewage in the corridors that the whole hospital was built in a swamp with a dead horse and a dead dog in the water, and the men were drinking that water. She knew as soon as they came in things would happen, and they did. So they got men to get the dead dog and the dead horse out, and they started boiling the water. Meanwhile, Florence and her nurses began scrubbing. They just scrubbed and cleaned. And she asked her father, who was a very wealthy Englishman. I think he'd had two or three inheritances. And he actually taught Florence, whereas a lot of young women in that time, they were not taught maths, science, English. Florence's sister was not interested, but she was. Mm-hmm. So she'd had this previous training. And you can see that God was preparing this woman for a mighty work. Mm-hmm. No wonder they loved her. And when she went back to London, probably 14 months later, but by the way, within 2 months, the death rate went from 50% to 2%. Mm-hmm. See, all Florence did was cleaned up the place. Yeah. We don't have infectious diseases anymore because people wash their bodies every day. They clean their houses every day. And I don't know, people don't seem to get that. Did you know in 1850, all the sewage from London went into the Thames and the people living in London drank that water. Mm-hmm. Now that's not that long ago. Mm-hmm. That's 1850.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I think Florence had a word in that as well, and they put an extensive sewage system under the streets of London.
Right.
And because people don't know their history, they don't realise that the lack or the absence of childhood diseases now is not due to the vaccine. It's due to increased hygiene, sanitation and nutrition, and that's all Florence did. Mm-hmm. In fact, she didn't like that they called her a heroine. She said, "All I did was clean up. All I did was improve hygiene, sanitation and nutrition." Yeah. And we need to remember Florence's story because it's just as applicable today. Mm-hmm. And for the people that sadly don't find out how dangerous the vaccines are until their child is damaged or dead,
yeah,
that's a very, very tragic way to find out actually it wasn't the
right. And I think most parents are just trying to do what they think is best for their child. I mean, there's no ill intention there at all, but I do think there is some sort of spiritual injury involved when we've outsourced our own agency and truth inside of our body to any external system or authority figure. I think so much of it is a very maladaptive like relationship we've created with these authority figures, rather than trusting, back to that kind of word, self-pathy, trusting ourselves.
You know, I absolutely agree. Every parent that facts their child does it because they want the best for their child. There is no doubt about that. And so it does get back to the mind-body connection.
Yeah.
And one thing I've been saying probably the last few months in my lectures is that I am the master of my destiny. Mm-hmm. I am the one that chooses what goes into my body and what doesn't. But to make that choice, I need information.
Yeah.
I need information. So I say to parents, if you're thinking of that, go to the pharmacist and ask for a printout of what is in the vaccines. Mm-hmm. And you will see for yourself the neurotoxins that are in the vaccine. And you can also say to the doctor, I will vaccinate my child if you sign this paper that you will be accountable if there are any side effects. Now, if every parent did those two things, simple things that any parent can do, there are excellent books out there, but those two simple things. And then they are seeing for themselves, for themselves, exactly what's happening here.
Yeah. And I don't think most people realize in 1986, at least in the United States, we instituted an act that indemnified all pharmaceutical makers from any liability from that particular set of products. And that right there, I think, speaks volumes.
It speaks volumes because there is nothing that you can buy that doesn't have a warranty.
Right.
Or there's not accountability if it doesn't work or if it causes damage. Do you know one of the things they said when they started that was, well, we know these vaccines have problems, so we're going to make this.
Yeah.
So there's an acknowledgement.
Right. 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 You know, and from the parenting perspective, I think we're all trying to instill accountability into our children. So I think we have to set the example with the relationships we have with other adults and with other entities and corporations and so forth, that we expect that same accountability from those institutions that we would expect our children to have. And we're somehow creating this opposing paradigm if we're not setting that example with the integrity we expect to come from these places.
That is so true. And I say to parents, you know, it's very important that you expect accountability with your children. It's very important that you train them from cause to effect so that they're ready for that world out there. My children, my six children, were brought up in a rainforest. They were brought up to think for themselves. I brought the children up to be independent as early as possible. Mm-hmm. Now, they've all gone their ways now, and most of them are living in cities. The boys are tradesmen. As soon as 2020 hit, they saw through it like glass.
Yeah.
And I thought, isn't this interesting? These children that were brought up in a rainforest with no television, no nothing other than just the bush and basic laws of life, understanding that God created an incredible body that can heal itself, and if a bee stings us. In fact, I saw it one day. I was on the clothesline and I saw the whole six children. The youngest was carried by one of the bigger ones. They all ran into the house and I thought I'd hide behind the sheet because I was interested to see what was happening. I knew by their actions that something had happened. And one child ran inside, come out with a bowl. Another child was sitting there and they put this stuff on a leg, and when they'd all settled down, you could see them sort of body language told me they're very happy with themselves now. So I came down and I said, what happened? And they said, oh, a bee sting.
Yeah,
they weren't looking for me. I was so happy. They were not looking for me. They just had the whole situation under control. All six were part of even the little one on the hip was watching the whole thing. I love that. I love that. And so fast forward to 2020, You know, I said to my son, Peter, you know, all the boys are very well built. I said to him, how do you go into the tradesman's store to get your, you know, your materials if you have to wear a mask? Because they refuse to wear masks. Mm-hmm. He said, oh, I just walk in as if I own the place. He's big. He just marches in. He gets what he wants, and it seems that no one wants to tackle him.
Yeah. No, so I think there's a lot to be said for just the presence you carry. I had the same experience with local stores too. You just walk in and just act normal, and
that's right. And also have a confidence. There's a confidence in the truth. Mm-hmm. There's a confidence in knowing that this is true. I know how the body works. I know what hurts it. I know what doesn't. Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful confidence there. Mm-hmm. And I know with people who've been taken in by all of this, there's not that confidence.
Yeah.
There's not that confidence. And when you're dependent on another entity and that entity is not a very reliable entity, I imagine that can be quite scary.
Right.
And so people say to me, Barbara, don't you worry that they might try and take you down, that someone might shoot you with a poison dart? You know what I say? Don't bother me at all. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even enter my mind, because I know that God has called me to do this work. Mm-hmm. And if God has a work for me, no man can take me down.
Yeah.
But if God says tomorrow, it's time to go, Barbara, I say, thank you, Father, because I know the best is yet to come. So that's a confidence. But at the same time, I'm not presumptuous. Mm-hmm. I do my part so that my body works. I make steps to make sure that I'm doing my part, because even though God is a wonderful God and he spoke and the world came into place, we still have our part to play.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you say that. I've undergone my own spiritual path, particularly in the last 5 years since I watched my father pass away in a hospital ICU. But in that time, I kind of came to realize, you know, I kind of call atheism as almost the greatest psyop that's ever been pulled over on people, because it's such a tool for instituting fear. And if you don't, if you think that this is it and we're just worm food and there's nothing after it, you're very easy to control. But if you have a connection to something that's greater than yourself, you know, whether that has a religious context or not, you're much less easy to control, right?
Oh, that's right. That's absolutely right. In fact, on the first night here, I put the two systems up on the board. The top of one is faith. The top of the other is fear.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it in black and white. Fear, we evolve, so we can't heal, so we need a drug, and the drug cannot heal. And the pharmaceutical company is based on deception. I think that most doctors are ethical. I think most doctors are really concerned for their patients, but the mm-hmm. pharmaceutical company is not. And then on the other side, we've got faith. Faith in an incredible body that was created by God to heal itself. This is the truth. Mm-hmm. And then herbs to actually work with the body if we need a little bit of help. What a difference in the two systems. And it's actually one or the other. So I absolutely agree with you on the fear factor. And in 2 Timothy 1 verse 7, the Bible says, where God says, I've not given you the spirit of fear, but of power, love, and of a sound mind. Now, look at that sound mind. A sound mind is assessing the pros and the cons, all the information. And when you assess all that, there is no fear.
Mm-hmm.
So there's polar opposites. And God's government is a government of freedom. Mm-hmm. And freedom's based on free choice. And if someone says to me, I choose to get vaccinated, I say to them, I respect your choice.
Yeah.
Please respect mine.
Right. Exactly.
It's as simple as that. So that's the beautiful gift we've been given, is free choice. So whenever a government comes in with a mandate, that's not free choice.
Yeah.
We need to be concerned and we need to stand up. So in 2020, when protests were banned, my husband held one every 2 weeks. It's our right.
Good for him.
It's our God-given right. And the police would be next to him and saying, excuse me, sir, if you speak, we'll arrest you. He would stand straight up and speak. Mm-hmm. Yes. And well, they never arrested him. They just fined him. But, you know, as most people have told me, when the fines went to court, most judges would throw them out.
Really? That's good to hear. States, it was kind of we didn't know what to believe in terms of what was coming out of Australia, because it looked pretty rough there for a while.
Well, it was pretty rough, but we live in we live out on a property, 450 acres, so there were no masks or hand sanitizers seen out there.
Right.
And if someone came in choosing to wear a mask, we respected their choice.
Right.
But two police came out one day and they said, this is 2021, they said, we've just had a report that your guests are serving themselves food. My husband said, really? You've come out 1 hour? And the police looked so embarrassed, so embarrassed. Michael said, a few years ago, my bike was stolen. No police came out for that. Mm-hmm. Isn't that incredible?
Right.
And the police said, well, we need to come in and see if they're serving themselves. And Michael said, sorry, but they're fasting today. There's no food served today. Isn't that incredible? Now, apparently someone put up on Facebook a photograph we worked out had been taken 3 years ago of guests serving themselves. That's how crazy it got.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
That's how crazy it got. And my husband says, if you're looking for common sense here, you won't find any. And that is something that has been lost, is common sense.
Yeah.
And common sense is another beautiful gift given by God. And I say, don't go ever against your common sense. Yeah. Your gut feeling is, this doesn't feel right to me, because it's your right. It's your God-given right to say, I choose to do this. Where it gets very difficult is with a child. And that's what I say to parents. You know, I get people saying, my child, they've just found out he's got a tumor. They want to cut, you know, child's only 6 years old. I say to them, you must be very careful how you handle this. So what you say is, I'd like to delay the operation a few months. I'd like to try a few things. Don't say alternate. Don't say natural. It's a pity that that has to be, and that's an indication of this lock hold that they have over people, because parents, they have the God-given right over their children, not medicine, and yet medicine by law can make your child a ward of the state. Wow, that's scary stuff.
It is.
Scary stuff. I think it's so sad that the very place we've always taken our children to get help, you have to be cautious of.
Yeah.
I don't like that. And, you know, I think most doctors and nurses are ethical, but occasionally you'll get a nurse who thinks that that bruise on your child's elbow might have been inflicted by you, and yet actually they fell off a stool.
Right.
You know that? Ah, and that's very hard as a parent when you're being accused of hurting your child.
Right.
And, yes, there are parents that do that, unfortunately, but, you see, it's a fine line.
Right.
Such a fine line.
Right, definitely. Fertility is a sign of a healthy society, and I think we're just seeing like a massive epidemic of infertility at this point. What does that say about our collective health and our culture?
What it says is there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And Newton's third law of motion states that to every action there is an equal and an opposite reaction. There is a reason. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you might be aware of my hormone lecture, and it's just gone berserk. That's all I can say. Do you know what that shows? That so many people have fertility problems. Women probably talk about it more than men, but Yeah, we're having couples can't have children. We're having men with low sperm count. We're having men, 50% of men over the age of 40 have penile dysfunction, inability to hold an erection. Where did this come from?
Right.
I mean, 100 years ago, 80-year-old men were still sexually active.
Right, right.
But today, they're losing that at about 50. Wow. Mm-hmm. And then you've got women. You know, it's huge with women, endometriosis, polycystic ovarian syndrome, fibroids in the uterus, breast cancer, all of this, it's a hormonal imbalance. And it's not just one thing. The contraceptive pill is one of the guiltiest parties, but there are women who've never been on the pill. So then you have a look at the glyphosates, the Roundups. Did you know that in 2015, the Sri Lankan government banned Roundup or glyphosate because of the rice farmers and their children who were getting endocrine cancers. Well, my graphic designer, my new book that he's graphic designing at the moment, he searched this out because we have to be technically correct. He said, you wouldn't believe it. They've just legalized it again. Ah!
Oh, my goodness.
How much money did it take to get them to? I don't know, but what would cause, has it suddenly become all right? No, it's not all right. Mm-hmm. So that's just about in everything, every food you buy, unless it's organic. And the plastics, and I'm horrified at the amount of women who are wearing next to their skin fabric that was created in a chemical laboratory. There's your polyester, your nylon, and your acrylics. Ah. Do you know, recently I was staying in a house and I could not sleep. I tossed, I turned, I thought, what's the matter with me? So I got up and I read the label on the sheets. Everything was polyester.
Yeah.
So I took it off and had my linen nightie on with my alpaca wraps over me. People don't realize, because I'm sitting there thinking, this is ridiculous. But people don't realize, bras, wow. Mm-hmm. And so, you see, I say men, they wear cotton underpants, cotton undershirts, cotton shirts, cotton jeans. But the ladies like the pretty things. Mm-hmm. And how many of those pretty things are all made out of these chemical fabrics?
Yeah.
And it's not the one day we might wear a bra from Victoria's Secret. Yeah. It's actually day after day after week after week after month after year. So there are these hidden chemicals that most people are shocked. I was at a health retreat recently. They'd lost my bags a couple of years ago, so I had to borrow clothes from ladies my size. I'm about 100 pounds. I'm only little. And there were a couple of ladies my size. You know, 90% of the clothes they gave me I could not wear. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, this is a health retreat.
Yeah.
They don't even know.
Yeah. I think the irony is, too, like so many of the fitness clothing and yoga clothes are probably the worst offenders. And here we are, we have a group of people that are actively trying to be very healthy, but we're wearing clothes.
And of course, the worst is when you're exercising, your pores open, you're hot, the fabric gets hot. But I have to tell you a funny story. I was in Idaho in 2021, went into a Trader Joe's, and there's this stand of underwear, leggings, singlets, all made out of bamboo, viscose. The brand name was Booty. So I went berserk. I spent $160 bras and underpants and tops and even leggings for my daughter. When I got home, I'm taking the packaging off, made in Australia.
Oh,
I bought this great. In Idaho.
That's hilarious.
You see, Booty, you know, they, and of course, now that I've mentioned it, are they prepared?
Right.
Onslaught? But, you know, it's stretchy. It's you'd think by stretching and looking at it that it was a polyester type thing. But when you wear it, it feels so lovely.
Yeah.
And you don't get sweaty like you do with polyester. Mm-hmm. And I do know Fruit of the Loom, or Fruit of the Womb, is it? They have a they have a lot of sports things that are 95% cotton, mm-hmm. and Jockey, J-O-C-K-E-Y.
Yeah.
Now, it is true that about 80% of their underwear is not kosher, but they do have a line that have viscose and modal. Mm-hmm. So viscose is bamboo. Modal is a cellulose spun from the birch tree.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I brought a petticoat in David Jones. It's like Nordstrom.
Yeah.
And it was modal. And I said to the lady, do you know what modal is? The lady that was serving me, she said, oh, not really. I said, it's the cellulose spun from the birch tree, you know. And she wrote it all down so that she could tell the people that were coming in to buy it. So I say to ladies, you might have to pay a little more for the good stuff, but I tell you, your health. And so what we've got to look at is the next generation.
Yeah.
Young girls today who are starting to develop, what are their clothes?
Mm-hmm.
Now we're getting girls developing breasts at 8,
yeah.
periods at 9.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not just the clothes, it's not just the chemicals, it's not just the Roundup, it's not just the pill, but it's also growth stimulants that are given to chickens. It's in the egg, it's in the mm-hmm. chicken. So, wow. When you first began, you talked about a deception. Isn't this what we're talking about?
Exactly.
And how many ladies love polyester because they don't have to iron it?
Right.
Well, you will find the same thing with viscose. Rayon is another one from wood pulp and bamboo.
Yeah.
If you're as conscious about your health as I am, you probably read every food label at the grocery store to keep an eye out for toxic ingredients and produce sprayed with pesticides. You may even shop organic beauty brands for your personal care products, but do you read your clothing labels or research fashion brands with integrity? I was shocked when I learned my favorite yoga pants and even my everyday clothes are full of toxic chemicals and synthetic fabrics that are not compatible with our bodies. Many clothes contain PFAS or forever chemicals that are extremely difficult for our bodies to detox, and they are linked to thyroid issues, hormone disruption, birth defects, reproductive toxicity, and more. Formaldehyde is used in many anti-wrinkle fabrics, and many other fabrics are treated with pesticides and antifungal chemicals. Most people think of their skin only as a barrier when in fact it's also like a sponge or semi-permeable membrane that allows things in and out of our bodies. Consider how many medications are deliverable through patches or creams. That is because skin absorbs many substances it comes into contact with, including the toxic chemicals and fabrics of your clothing. And that's why I switched to buying Pact clothing. Pact makes its clothes with certified organic cotton in fair trade manufacturing facilities. Organic cotton uses up to 95% less water than conventional cotton during the wash phase and doesn't contain the harsh chemicals, bleaches, or dyes that conventional cotton uses. Additionally, conventional cotton often requires the use of chemical-laden pesticides that increases the debt burden on the farmer and leaches into the land and water. So not only is packed organic clothing so super soft that you'll never want to wear anything else, but your new t-shirt is also better for the environment and good for the people who played a part in making it. Organic cotton is even more important for underwear. According to recent studies, men who wore polyester underwear had lower testosterone levels and reduced sperm counts. Another study found polyester to have injurious effects on ovaries and cause low serum progesterone in women. I always say healthy is sexy. If you're interested in dressing with integrity and wearing apparel that supports your health, consider making your next fashion statement with Pact. Head on over to the Jen's Favorite Things link at jenmayo.com to shop Pact's full line of women's and men's clothing and receive 15% off your first purchase when you use code JenMayo15.
Yeah. Knowledge is power. Knowledge is power. I've started using a brand called Pact that's all organic cotton since I've learned about the toxic load we're taking on just with the clothes we wear. I think most people think our skin is a barrier, but our skin is really more like a sponge.
Our skin is a sponge. It is a barrier, and that's why nothing should ever be injected into it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It is a barrier, but it breathes and it absorbs, and so that's important to be mindful of. And one lady said, oh, Barbara, she said, these big, thick sports bras under my pretty little blouses. I said, well, go to Jockey. Mm-hmm. You know, they have some more tender ones. You've got to search out. And it may be when you go into Nordstrom, 90% of what you see will be the plastic or the chemical fabrics, but you will find some. Mm-hmm. I even went into Harrods in London and I found two sports bras by Sweaty Brett, Sweaty Betty. that was the brand name, and they were Modell.
Oh, nice.
That was two in the whole of Harrods.
All right.
And they were expensive, but, you know, I decided to get them because some of my clothes I get from the thrift store, and I certainly take my glasses in so that I can read the labels.
Mm-hmm.
So you can balance it out.
Yeah, yeah. And cholesterol is another place where I think we've been deceived, and unfortunately intentionally so, by the pharmaceutical companies. What role do those play in our hormone balance?
Well, it's an interesting question because our hormones are all made from cholesterol. So mm-hmm. if someone's on cholesterol-lowering medication, they're going to have trouble with their hormones. And if someone's on cholesterol-lowering medication, they're not going to have enough vitamin D because vitamin D is made from cholesterol.
Yeah.
And Dr. Malcolm Kendrick in his book, The Great Cholesterol Con, I loved what he said. He said, for the first time, normal levels of a normal vital body substance is being called a disease.
Yeah.
And he is scathing on this theory. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm still waiting for the research. So for people that want an authority, they can settle. He's a cardiovascular surgeon. He knows his stuff. And there's also Dr. Dwight Lundell. He's a cardiovascular surgeon, and he wrote an e-book called The Great Cholesterol Lie.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Peter Dingle in Australia, his book is The Great Cholesterol Deception. I say to people, we're running out of words.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's another book, The Great Cholesterol Hoax, The Great Cholesterol Myth. We're running out of work. So Dr. Natasha Campbell-McBride, she had to call her book Put Your Heart in Your Mouth. And she also shows the same thing. And the proverb says, in the multitude of counselors, there's safety. These people don't know each other. They're from all over the world, and they're all saying the same thing.
Right, right. And I met Dr. Natasha a few years ago. She's a lovely woman as well. And I had Sally Fallon Morrell on the podcast maybe last year sometime, and she talked about how they actually changed the number guidelines for cholesterol numbers when they introduced statins.
That's right.
Specifically, that's just so right. They could sell the drug.
Do you know, that's absolutely right. In fact, I had the privilege of meeting a nutritionist who was 69 about 6 years ago. She said, I have the advantage of being in university 40 years ago, and 40 years ago it was quite okay to have a cholesterol level of 300.
Right.
300. And I said to people, our bodies haven't changed. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you get below 150, your brain doesn't work.
Exactly.
Because your brain is the fattiest organ in the body and it loves cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
So there we're coming back again to the mind-body relationship.
Yeah, exactly. Can you touch a little bit on alcohol and caffeine as it relates to hormone balance?
Well, one of the problems with caffeine mm. is how it disrupts the neurotransmitters in the brain. Mm. And how many ladies, when they have premenstrual tension, go for the chocolate and the coffee?
Right.
But what it does, it takes out more than it gives, if that makes sense. So taking coffee to give a boost is like taking out a loan to pay off your loan. And, of course, that loan is coming from your adrenal glands. And then the adrenal glands, of course, eventually they get exhausted, and the adrenal glands are directly affected with the hormonal cascade in our body. So that's how the caffeine affects it. Caffeine really ages ladies, and a lot of ladies are horrified to think that. And people marvel at my energy, and I think part of my energy is the fact that I don't drink coffee. In fact, I've never drank coffee.
Yeah.
I walk past a coffee shop, I stop, I take a big breath because it's a lovely scent, but then I keep walking.
Yeah.
Because I know what it does to me. And the effect of, I know what it does to a human being. So the other effect is from alcohol. And alcohol is quite a toxic poison. It was 15 years ago the Australian Health Department issued a warning, there's no safe dose of alcohol. Alcohol is a neurotoxin, meaning it kills brain cells. Now, it is true, in 1998, a group of scientists discovered the brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which can cause neurogenesis, new brain cells. But I say, let's look after what we've got. And often with alcohol, also the high sugar, in his book Sugar Blues, William Dofty shows the devastating effect of sugar on ladies' hormones. So the alcohol's not only coming in with the sugars, but it's also coming in with that toxicity of the alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think I've heard you say before, too, something about a much lower rate of mental illness during the time of prohibition.
Yes. In fact, yeah. Now, an 85-year-old guy told me this 15 years ago. So I quote him. He said that he had the figures. It's very hard to get these figures. He said in the prohibition time, mental institution occupancy dropped to 8%. Mm-hmm. He said the jails were almost empty, domestic violence almost wiped out. He said the only reason they legalized it is because the American government said if we legalize alcohol, the American people won't have to pay taxes. Well, that was a great deception, wasn't it?
Right.
And yet I saw a documentary on the prohibition, and they came across as if allowing alcohol was freedom, and the people were dancing in the streets. Finally, this horrible, antiquated law of no alcohol. And I thought, wow, this is actually not really what happened. And so those figures that this 85-year-old man gave me 15 years ago, I think it's almost impossible to get such figures.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild. Can you maybe give us a few examples of some lost natural remedies that people can implement into their lives now and maybe help extract themselves from the matrix of the, surgery and pharmaceutical-based medical system that we're embedded in now?
Well, I think one very effective one is castor oil. Mm. And castor oil penetrates deeper than any other oil. I have a book at home called The Oil That Heals. And it's written by a medical doctor who uses it in his practice. And in Nebraska, I think about a month ago, I've lost track of where I've been, a lady came to me and she's in her 70s and she said, 2 months ago I had a bunion. And the bunion, she told me, was coming out the side of her foot about half an inch.
Yeah.
She showed me her foot. There was no bunion. She said, I applied castor oil compresses every night for 2 months and the bunion is gone. Now that's incredible.
Yeah.
And I've also known ladies to wear castor oil compresses on their abdominal area and break up fibroids, break up cysts on the ovaries. So one lady I met, she had breast cancer. She said, I wore a castor oil compress 24/7. Mm-hmm. She said, I was diagnosed 20 years ago. She said, I don't have breast cancer now.
Wow.
So the castor oil is incredible.
Yeah.
And the good news is it'll break up a bone spur, but it won't break up your bones. So one would say, how could that be? Well, we have to go to Psalm 104, verse 14, that God gave herbs for the service of man. Mm-hmm. So they come in to serve you. So they're only going to break up unnatural formations.
Yeah.
The other one I'd like to mention is charcoal.
Okay.
And charcoal's another forgotten one. But, you know, it hasn't been forgotten by medicine. Because did you know that medicine uses charcoal to filter blood for dialysis?
Yeah.
And did you know that medicine uses charcoal for drug overdoses?
Yeah.
So they know something that we don't, and they're not telling us.
Right.
And NASA used charcoal to filter air in outer space. Mm-hmm. NASA uses charcoal to filter water in outer space. I tell you this to show you it is acknowledged scientifically. Right. And what charcoal does is it absorbs and neutralizes poisons. Nothing else will do that. Now, that term, absorbs and neutralizes poisons, is adsorb. Adsorb means absorbs and neutralizes. And charcoal is able to absorb and neutralize, hundreds of times its own weight. It's quite incredible. It has all these little facets, little surface areas that sort of slope all through the charcoal, and that's what absorbs and neutralizes the poisons. So it's fairly well known if you travel through Asia to go with charcoal tablets so that if you get barley belly, you can take the charcoal. It'll absorb and neutralize the poison. So it can be used for diarrhea, for vomiting, but also it can be used externally. So externally it can be used for spider bites, as my children knew, for the bee sting. So bee stings, snake bites, wasp bites. It's quite incredible when you use it. It takes the pain out almost straight away. But where it also is being used is for stomach pain. It can be used on the outside, also for sore eyes, charcoal poultices there. When you mix charcoal with water, it's like mixing dirt with water. So you can mix it with a bit of psyllium husks, make like a soft gel.
Okay.
And that's how you make your external poultices. But I had a lady come to me with a boil the size of like that little plate that you put under a cup. That's how big the boil was. They'd been in Asia as missionaries, and her husband brought her to me with three little boys. They didn't know what to do, so I let her stay in my home. And I did charcoal and I boiled up linseed or flaxseed till it was a jelly, and I mixed it together and I made a poultice every night. And all night she'd lay with this poultice on. On the third night when I took the poultice off, it all came away.
Oh, wow.
And then I just cleaned it with hydrogen peroxide. We put her in the sun every day. And when her husband came a week later, he just had tears in his eyes. And they couldn't afford to give me anything. I said, my reward is to see the lady better.
Yeah.
And so he gave me this beautiful big wooden bowl he'd made for all my fruit. But charcoal absorbs and neutralizes poisons.
Oh, that's amazing. And I think, you know, everybody's heard the term, the germ theory model of disease, or even the terrain theory model of disease, but we don't usually hear the term the toxicity model of disease, when in fact, so many of things that are even, you know, blamed on germs are typically more a function of toxicity in our environment and in our internal environment.
That's absolutely right. Why are the germs there? Why are the bacteria there? It's because of the toxicity. So we have to go back. And that's why I like to call myself a private investigator.
Yeah.
Investigating why these things are so. No wonder the smoker coughs up yellow lumps. He hasn't got an infection. Mm-hmm. The microbes are busy cleaning up the damage done by his smoking.
Right. And I think if we kind of reorient ourselves and understand that maybe germs aren't the cause of disease, but the result of disease,
That's right.
I think I've heard you refer to them as the garbage collectors of the body. You know, they're doing their job because the dead tissue is already there.
They're just doing what they were designed to do. And as I have also said, if we didn't have these microbes, there'd be so much rubbish, or you call it trash, on the planet. We wouldn't be able to walk on the planet. Their aim is to bring matter back to dust.
Yeah.
That's why if you understand their role, then when they're present, you think, now why are they there?
Exactly. Well, Barbara, this has been a fantastic conversation. I know that my listeners are going to really get a lot out of it and have enjoyed it myself personally. What are you up to these days? I know you've had to leave Australia to continue with your work. What's keeping you busy now?
Well, I'm very busy.
Yeah.
And 2.5 weeks ago, I was in Canada and I was speaking at a conference there. And then last week, I was at a retreat in Living Springs, Alabama, running a retreat there. This week, I'm in Maryland's giving evening lectures to quite a large group of 250.
Right.
And I hear tell that some of them have come from all over the place. Next week I'm in Texas. Not sure where, I just know I'm in Texas.
Okay.
And then after that I go to Ireland and I'm in two different places in Ireland for 2 weeks. And then I'm in Germany and then I'm in Spain and then I'm in Germany again. Then I'm in the Netherlands and then I fly home on the 20th of November.
Oh, nice.
I said to Michael, I want you to block out December and January because that's when the children and the grandchildren come.
Oh, good.
I know that I'm in Brazil in a few places next February, March, but I must be home in April because that's when the children and the grandchildren come.
Oh, great.
So well, I'm home for 3 months of the year.
Good. Well, I appreciate that Australia kind of kicked you out so that you could share your gifts with the rest of the world. So,
yeah. And I'm seeing that, in fact, in 2021, I was a little sad when I first heard because it was so unfair and so unjust. I allowed myself to cry for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I brushed myself off and thought, now I wonder what plan God has for me now. So when I'm in Germany 2021 at a conference, a lady said to me, Barbara, we're so glad you're banned because now you are free to come
exactly.
to us. And you know, sometimes you'll get a light bulb moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my light bulb moment. I thought, the ban has freed me.
Right. Exactly. They God works in mysterious ways.
He
and, it was definitely a blessing in my opinion. So thank you, Australia. But yes, your gifts are spreading across the world. So where can people find you online or on social media? I'm assuming you've got a YouTube channel.
I'm sorry, but I don't know.
Okay.
Someone told me I have a fan club, but I don't know. But I do know that my itinerary can be found on www.selfhealbydesign.com.
Okay, great.
And my daughter's website where you can get the book is easy to remember. It's www.mistymountainusa.com.
Oh, great.
.com. And great. She just received 30,000 more books yesterday.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
So, and poor Emma, she's just a mum with 7 kids. One day she had 16 people working for her.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Doing the books and the things. So you're right. It certainly has gone out there.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I thank you so much for your time. And I'm looking forward to sharing a lot of clips, too, with our listeners on social media. So, thank you for your time, and I wish you the very best in your travels as you continue to spread the word about self-healing and the gifts that nature has given us.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Jennifer. It's been a pleasure discussing these things with you. Always a pleasure to discuss it with someone on the same page.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Barbara.
This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Any statements and views expressed by myself or my guests are not medical advice. The opinions of guests are their own, and the Body Literacy Podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. If you have a medical problem, please consult a qualified and competent medical professional. As always, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Body Literacy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and sign up for updates over at jenmayo.com.